Emma Fogarty to studio. How are you, Emma?
I'm not too bad. Thank you for having me.
It's so nice to see you. I can't believe it's been that long since we last met.
I know, it's scary. It's 3 years.
3 years ago.
Since the Late Late Show. Yeah, it's amazing. I don't know where it's gone.
You were. I literally, as I said to you a second ago, if you told me it was 12 months ago,
that's
I would have
it.
Totally believed you.
Yeah, time flies.
We were. You were on that time. I think Michael O'Leary was there.
Yes, he was. He donated 100,000 from his calendars at Christmas.
Yeah.
And he brought us on. He gave it to us, to Deborah Ireland.
Deborah Ireland.
And yeah. And we went on, so it was great. It was
you were
amazing
great that night, by the way.
Thank you very much. It was amazing to be on. We were delighted, and we got such an amazing response from the public. It was it was brilliant. I mean, we made 16,000 in donations.
You're joking.
From just 10 minutes, you know. So it was amazing.
They're very generous people. Sometimes
we're very lucky. Yeah, we've very good supporters.
Now we didn't really get into your full story that
night.
Well, that's why I'm so glad to see you, so we can learn a bit more about you today.
Very good.
And your story. You're what age now, Emma?
I'm 29.
29.
God help me.
How long were you given to live when you were born?
A week. Doctor, I was born in Kilkenny. I was born with no skin on my left foot and my right arm. So obviously they had no idea what was wrong, but they knew something was not right. Yeah. And I was born at about 2 o'clock. I was christened at 5 o'clock and then rushed straight to Crumlin Hospital. And my dad came up with me. Mum stayed in Kilkenny. And daddy came up, and the doctors told him within a day that I'd be lucky to live a week.
What an extraordinary thing to
say. Yeah, exactly. I feel so sad. It's terrible for my parents. I mean, I'm the eldest. I was their first little girl. And it was a big shock. I mean, the pregnancy was fine. There was no problems. It was just a normal pregnancy. And then bang.
What was the diagnosis? What were they saying was wrong with you as a little baby, brand new baby?
Well, they had no idea. They biopsied me, and within, I don't know, maybe a week or 2 weeks, they knew it was EB. But still, at that time, it was 84, and they didn't really know how to look after me. They didn't know. There was no Deborah Ireland. There was no EB nurse or doctor.
And what's so, EB?
EB stands for epidermolysis bullosa.
What is that? What is that?
It's almost the whole alphabet of word letters.
Is, isn't
it really is. But it's basically blistering of the skin.
Yeah.
So if you got a blister, it would stay small and would eventually dry up and go away. For me, they grow and grow and grow, and you have to burst them with a needle. But they could grow to the size of an apple, you know, they could be very big. And then when you burst it, it becomes an open wound. And then that has to be dressed. And that could take weeks and it could take months. I mean, I've had a wound for 18 months. I've had wounds for 2 or 3 weeks, you know. So
you're 29.
29.
You were meant to be here for a week.
Yes.
How come you have been with us for so long?
I have no idea, to be honest.
Well, I know from talking to you before and seeing you here today, I know how determined you are as a human being and as a woman. But what I don't know is medically, how come you have survived, given what happened?
Yeah,
that day?
I don't know. I suppose I put it all down to my parents. They looked after me. They were amazing. I was in Crumlin for 3 months. The doctors didn't want to let me home, so they insisted on bringing me home. And they literally just went as they could, you know. I didn't have any dressings. I had no bandages. So I would wear, like if I wore a dress with tights, the tights would stick to the open wounds. So I didn't have bandages until I was 8. And we had to go to the UK to learn how to do that.
How to do the bandaging.
Yeah.
So was it, just to try and put a bit of person, you've had it all your life, so you're well used to it.
So
for people who, like me, who wouldn't be familiar with it,
Is
it like having like a constantly in a layer of skin gone from
you? Yeah, almost. I've
like
about 70%. Yes, I've about 70% of my body is covered in bandages or open wounds, and they would be compared to third degree burns.
All the time,
yeah.
Would they have the same level of pain associated with it?
Oh, you're in constant pain all the time. I'm on 10 medications in total. About 5 of those are painkillers, and about 3 or 4 of those are morphine based. And I've never experienced a minute without pain, and I'm always on those.
And yet you can smile?
You have to keep going. You know, I don't have a choice. This is what I was given. So you can either, you're given a life to live, and you can either live it or sit in the corner and dwell on it. And that won't get you anywhere. So I've chosen to live my life as best I can.
So you grew up then with this, and I presume you had to be slightly cosseted a little bit, because if you, for example, you're cycling your bike as a little girl, tell me the dangers that you'd have that every other little girl doesn't have or didn't have.
That was hard. I loved cycling my bike. I always had stabilisers on it. I never took them off because I was too afraid of falling.
What would happen if you fell?
There was an experience one day, and I don't think I'll ever forget it, really. I was cycling around my house, and I took a corner, but I took it too sharp. So I went off the bike. I fell off, and I hit the ground, and the skin came off my nose, my two hands, my two knees, and probably the soles of my feet as well from the bang hang of the concrete.
And that's because your skin is so fragile.
It's so fragile. Like, compared to the wings of a butterfly, it's that fragile. So if you, if say me and you were here and you walked towards me and you tripped and you fell against my arm, the skin would just tear off my arm.
Oh, Christ. Mm. Okay. Yeah. It makes your, dare I say it, your skin crawl. You know what I mean? It makes you, as somebody listening to the story, yes, you're just thinking, the pain of that.
Yeah, exactly. And it is. It is,
that pain.
It's very sore all the time. Like, if I fell, I would cry like a 2-year-old almost, because the pain is so intense and there's nothing you can do about it. You just have to deal with it and try and focus on something else, or, you know, you have to analyse it in a different way, because there's no way of getting rid of the pain. It's always there. Even morphine, it won't hit it.
So when you wake up in the morning, you have to take some pills?
I wake up in the morning, I can't eat. EB is internal as well. So my throat has been scarred from eating over the years. So if you can imagine, your throat is just a straight down pipe. Mine is like an hourglass in two places. So it has two strictures on my throat. So food, even saliva on bad days, can get stuck there. Like 2 weeks ago, I was eating a piece of toast and it got stuck. And when it went down, I could feel it go down and I could feel it tear all the inside of my throat. And I couldn't swallow my saliva for the next 2 days. So I had to constantly spit it out almost. And then I started drinking, that happened on a Saturday. I started drinking liquids on the Wednesday and I started eating then on the following Saturday and Sunday.
So what will you have for lunch today?
Probably soup or yogurt or mashed potato. That's
everything
most.
Has to be everything liquidized.
Everything has to be almost liquidized. Yeah, or very soft mashed food.
Have you ever had a burger?
No.
Okay, so you don't want one, or you don't know, or you don't care?
I can't eat one, no. So I've never eaten a burger, so I almost don't know what I'm missing.
That's what I was going to ask you. So you don't know, so
you don't
care.
I don't know what it's like, so I don't. Now, if I'm sitting here and you're eating a burger, I'd be like, oh, what's that like? Yeah. You know what I mean? You have that craving and you want to know what it tastes like.
The curiosity.
But I could never eat it. No, I know it would never go down.
How was school?
It was, primary school was great. I loved it. My parents, when I started, went into the principal and they spoke to most of the parents and said, you know, this is what's wrong. She's not contagious. Just treat her like anyone else and she'll be fine.
She's not contagious.
Yeah, and even to this day, people are worried that I would be contagious.
Are they?
Yeah. You wouldn't believe
what does that mean,
people,
that you might be contagious?
They're probably afraid that they would contract or get EB, you know, because nobody knows what it is. They don't understand it. I mean, I live at home in Abbey Leaks, and even I went to Port Leash and people are staring, you know, so it's...
What are they looking at? Because, I mean, if I look at you now, I don't see anything different.
Yeah,
I'm very
lucky in that my face and my neck are actually quite good.
Yeah.
It's the most obvious part to me, obviously, is my hands. Yeah. I mean, they're red and my fingers have been fused together over the years.
Yeah.
So they've joined together. And one of my hands then almost looks like a fist, so I can't move it.
Yeah, I mean, your hands are very—they're very striking, because they're not like my hands.
Exactly, that's it.
As you say, there's what is it? The skin? They're down to quite pink red.
Exactly, yeah. They look like a burn almost. They do, because when I was even 6 and 7, I went into shops, and when I would hand somebody the money, they say, "Oh, were you in a fire?" So it does look like I've been in a fire, but it's because they are so red.
You only seem to have movement in your thumbs.
In my thumbs, yeah, exactly. And I'm lucky because I can't move the rest really.
Yeah.
But I'm lucky because I can use most things. I mean, I can write. I can use my laptop.
Yeah.
I love my iPhone and my iPad. Mm. So you adapt to what you need to adapt to.
When people say to you about the fire, I presume people say that to you all the time, life.
I've always got questions.
Did you develop a line to kind of get out of that corner, or did you?
I've said no, I wasn't in a fire, obviously, and I have a skin condition.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. And if people want to ask more, they can ask more.
You went to school, and obviously a good school, and they saw that you were able to just be like any other kid, as you should be.
Yeah.
And then what did you do after school then?
I was in school, and like I said, I got on very well.
Right.
I suppose the biggest difference in primary school was that I couldn't take part in PE, or I couldn't go outside at lunchtime and play with my friends. I had to stay inside. So they were the biggest differences. Even EB is very, anything can happen. So tomorrow, anything, you know, I could end up in hospital. It's very... sudden, anything can happen. So even on days like I'd be sick and I get blisters in my eyes as well. Like EB is everywhere, you don't escape. So I got blisters in my eyes, and I can guarantee you it would always happen on like the days I would have a school tour, or you know what I mean, you'd be doing something fun and you won't want to miss out on. So I used to be devastated, and I suppose that was the main difference. I was so, when I got really upset, and I would say, why is this happening to me? And it's not fair. I want to go, and all my friends are going, and things like that. And then after primary school, I just went to secondary school. I completed my leaving cert, and then I went to college in Limerick. I moved out at 18.
Did you ever think about the cruelty of life's lottery that you were picked to have EB.
Yeah, definitely.
And was that a dark place to be when you thought about it at all, especially as a teenager and heading into adolescence?
That's it, yeah. It was hard and it still is. I mean, you have your very bad days and bandages, doing bandages can be very hard. I mean, you do have your very hard days and you do think, why is this happening to me? It's not fair. You know, I just want to live my life like any 29-year-old or 16-year-old as a teenager, you know, and I want to do the things my friends are doing. And I want to be like everyone else. Yeah, I definitely had hard days. But my parents taught me to be very determined and strong and to fight. Yeah. And that's what I did.
I remember reading a book. This isn't necessarily relevant to your story, but just as you're talking, and it had a profound effect on me, called The Diving Bell and the Butterfly.
Okay.
And this man had what's called locked-in syndrome, whereby he had a very charmed life and then he had an accident. And all he could do was he could see and think, but the rest of him couldn't move.
Okay.
I remember thinking how much I took for granted after reading that book. Yeah. It's a very short little read.
Yes.
But I remember thinking, God, how lucky. He described shaving, for example.
Yes.
And the blade hitting the chin and the joy of what we would say is a mundane and actually kind of irritating job. I suddenly realised I was lucky to be able to
shave.
Your description of eating a slice of toast and what I would just jump down a slice.
Exactly.
I had no
They're
idea.
So different,
it's very humbling to talk to you, to hear it, because to do what you do in the way that you do it is an extraordinary
Feat, you very much.
If you don't mind me saying so.
No, thank you very much. You're very kind.
Which we credit to your folks and yourself.
I do. Yeah, I definitely thank my parents for that. They got me through everything and taught me to be who I am.
Yeah, but they were working with good raw materials.
So, I don't know.
No, it's true. You know that. You know that.
Thank you.
You left home.
I did.
And where did you go?
I went to LIT in Limerick and I did business and marketing and I loved it. I loved it. But it was almost about the independence for me because like I said, when I was born, I was told I wouldn't live a week, but if I did, I wouldn't be able to do anything. And even doctors, when I was 18, 17 and 18 and I said, I want to go to Limerick and move out, they were stunned and they said, no, you won't be able to. Like, how will you do it? So I was delighted that I could be independent and I could do things. Now I had a PA. And I wouldn't have been able to go without a PA. And that PA almost became like my mother. She had to do everything that my mother has to do, like
bandages.
The bandages, the medications, the helping me get dressed even. You know, little things even like helping me make soup, you know, things like that. So bringing me to college as well, because I wouldn't have been able to walk 10 minutes up the road. So she had to drive me to college to and back.
Is it sore for you to sit in a chair or in a seat to get a lift somewhere?
Yeah, I have a special cushion now. But at the time, it can be. I mean, if you're sitting in a place for a long time, it can take the skin off your thighs, your bum, everything.
Yeah. So there's pain around
every aspect
of your life. What did you do in college? What did you study?
Business and marketing.
Okay, and you completed that?
I did, yeah.
And you got a job then after that?
I did. I actually got sick at the end of the college year, the third year, and I went home for a year and I took a year out and I had the option of going back if I wanted, but I wanted to get out and work and do something else and do something different. So I did. I applied for a few jobs and I got permanent TSB,
And you got working in there?
And I got working there for 3 years.
How was that for you?
I loved it again. It was great.
You're very sociable, you're very chatty.
Yeah, I love meeting people. I love talking to people. Yeah, I love all that. So I did. I really enjoyed the bank. I loved getting out there again, being independent, walking down Grafton Street, and things like that. Everything that every young woman loves, I'm the exact same.
A lot of young women like going to the shop to buy a dress or a pair of shoes. Is that as much as they'd like to go and buy a book and do everything else?
Yes.
But I'm just saying clothes is something girls like, as you know. And as I can see, you're obviously a fashionable person. So was it a tricky one for you to try on a dress or a pair of shoes?
Yeah, definitely. You have to be very careful. I mean, trying it on the shop, probably no, I won't, because it does take time to try and get on a dress, over bandages, because you could easily move a bandage and then that would cause more trouble. So I would never try on clothes in the shop, even now. Yeah. But any clothes, I mean, it's very hard to buy dresses and things like that because I would have to always cover my arms are bandaged, my legs are completely bandaged, so I could never wear a dress without tights or leggings or even a cardigan or a top under it. So it's very hard to kind of choose. I could never wear shorts. I could never wear a little skirt without leggings or anything like that. I'd never show my legs or arms.
And that's because of the
bandages.
The bandages.
Yeah.
What is the greatest pleasure you get out of life?
I do love being patient ambassador for Deborah. It is great. It gives me something to do. I'm getting out, I'm meeting new people, and I'm helping people because I've dystrophic EB. There's different forms of EB.
Okay.
And I'm the only adult with my form of EB, and it's the most severe living form of EB. And the next stage to me is 10, and I've known that little girl since she was a baby, and I've known a lot of the kids since they were born. So I love being there for them and supporting them. And I mean, that little girl Claudia, who's 10, I mean, the last time I saw her, she almost gave me a pop quiz on EB because she just wanted to meet somebody else who was like her and who she could relate to and ask
her
questions. Yes, you've met Claudia.
I have a sketch she did for me on my desk.
She gave you jellies or something.
Yeah, exactly.
She's a great little girl, and she's quite like me. She's determined and strong, and she's a fighter. Her parents are the exact same.
So what's the future now? Because you mentioned a minute ago that you liked walking up Grafton Street.
Yes.
And when you're working in permanent TSB, yes, a job you finished now 3 years ago. Was that because of the EB?
I have also got osteoporosis because of EB, and I fractured my leg and I had to go into the wheelchair.
How did that happen?
Walking. Just by walking.
Simple.
I can't say when or where or what I was doing. It just happened.
And how long are you in a wheelchair now?
5 years.
And
five
is
years
it permanent?
It probably is, as much as I hate to admit it, but it probably is. It's hard because the fracture has healed. I've been in it 5 years, and that stopped me from working and being independent. So I moved home. Mm. And I was in the wheelchair, and the fracture healed, but while I was in the wheelchair, my skin almost became even more sensitive on the soles of my feet. So when I tried to walk, a blister would come, then a wound, and then you wouldn't be able to walk.
They were out of practice.
That's it, exactly. Yeah. So every time I tried, it was almost like a vicious circle that you were put back in the wheelchair again. Now I know I'll try again, and it won't be the end of it. And when my health is well enough and good enough, I'll give it another go. But not at the moment.
It's not a motorised.
No, it's not. I've had one, and it's very hard. I mean, you won't believe the places that are so inaccessible or unaccessible. It's unbelievable. And if I went to a shop or a pub and I had one step, I could get up it with this wheelchair, whereas if you had an electric wheelchair, you wouldn't be able to, because you can't lift it, it's too heavy, and it can't go back to get up a step. Whereas if you have this wheelchair, they can tilt you back a little bit and up you go.
And if they tilt and your back hits the back of the chair,
it's all padded, thank God. So
you don't feel that whack of pain.
I don't have a whack, but you definitely have to brace yourself almost
for
that.
You got to hunch your shoulders like you
exactly
just did there and
yeah
said, okay, you ready for this?
Exactly,
and you're
gone. Yeah, exactly.
You're living back with the folks again.
I am.
Who's driving who mad more? Are they driving you mad, or are you driving them mad?
Probably me, to be honest.
Yeah, I'd say so.
No, I love being at home. I mean, my parents, like I said, are great. I have a younger sister, and she's in college, and she's great, and they're very good to me, you know, and they let me do almost what I want to do. They give me that freedom, and I do have a PA who brings me out 3 days a week, and so I do get out of the house a lot, and then I'm very involved with Deborah Ireland, like I said, so that gets me out of the house. So I still have a slight bit of independence when I'm at home. Yeah.
So what does the future hold for you, Emma? What's the plan?
I would love to get back walking. I would. That's very obvious. I would do anything to get back walking, and hopefully it'll happen someday. At the moment, I'm actually learning how to drive, which
How's
is a huge
going?
Thing. Yeah, it's great. It's doing really well. I've had 4 lessons.
Can your feet work with the pedals?
I can use the pedals, yeah. It's an automatic car, so I only have to use one foot, which is not too bad. Yeah. And then it's fully adapted to what I need, because as you can see, like I said, with my hands the way they are, I wouldn't be able to hold the steering wheel. So I have almost a tripod that comes out of the wheel, of the steering wheel, and I can just slot my hand into it and pull and push
That's
the wheel.
Cool. Yeah,
which is great. So they're easy enough, and I'm doing quite well, I think.
Can you go to a pub?
I can, definitely. But again, I have to be very aware of what's around me, who's around me. And it's funny, when you go in, and you're going to your table or whatever, you almost have to see the least path of resistance, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense.
And you almost have to judge someone's level of drunkenness. Because if they fall on you, your night is over. That's it. I'm going home. And I'll be destroyed for months. You know what I mean? It's not even just the pain of one night. If somebody fell on me, it would go on. It will go on for a long time, you know. It's not just the one night.
So you have to tread
so, I have to be very
so
careful.
Carefully.
Yeah, very carefully. And I'm very lucky that my friends are very good to me. They look after me. You know, they know exactly what will happen if something happens. So they are good to me, and they look after me as best they can.
You're a remarkable person.
Thank you. I don't think so, but
no,
thank
well,
you.
I do. And I know you wouldn't have chosen this path if you could have helped it.
No,
but let's not get ahead of ourselves and say, you know, I'm delighted with all of that. But having said that, I don't know of many people who, if they had this to deal with would do it with the grace and elegance that you do.
Thank you very much. I'm sure they would.
Oh, I doubt it.
You have to fight. That's the only way. It's the only way to beat this is to fight.
Okay, well, look, you're remarkable and I'm so glad to see you again.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
No, it's an absolute pleasure, and thanks for coming in to tell us your story.
Thank you very much.
I tell you something, Deborah Ireland are lucky to have you.
Oh, thank you.
They really are.
Thank you, I'm very lucky to
have them. You're a wonderful ambassador for them. In fact, you're a wonderful ambassador for lots more than just Deborah Ireland,
I
suspect.
Thank you very much.
And I hope that that's recognised around the place.
Thank you.
So, look, thanks for that. I'd love to take a photo with you, if
absolutely,
that's okay.
Absolutely, definitely.
It would be my honour and privilege.
And mine, thank you.
And look, let's do it again sometime.
Absolutely.
But thanks so much. And there's so many lovely comments coming in about you. I won't read them all out because I don't want you to have a big head. It wouldn't be appropriate. But, you know, a lot of people saying that they're feeling a little bit silly about losing their car keys or, you know, stumping their toe or whatever. Those are, and even bigger things because, you know, when you listen to what you have to say, it's something
thank
else. If people want to know more information, there is a website. It is deborahireland.org.
Yeah, that's
and
it.
And they can go there to learn more.
Yeah, and we've a lot of events coming up. We've two big ones this year. We've the mini marathon, where Robert Sheehan has actually come on board with his brother, and they're going to take a couple of ladies out for some cocktails.
Well, do you know something?
So
if Robert Sheehan, who's of course the Love Hate, Darren from Love Hate, if you put him at the beginning of the race, you would have hundreds of thousands
of
women.
You would, yes,
and just
definitely.
Go.
And they'd all fly after him. That's it.
That's a good. And what's the other event?
And then we have the Kerry Challenge, which is in the end of June, and that's a 75-kilometre trek over the Kerry Mountains.
Lovely.
But what the most exciting bit is that it's my 30th birthday that weekend.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So
don't mind the trek.
Exactly. That's it. It's a big milestone for me. So we're going to have a huge party on the Saturday night. We're going to show Dingle how Deborah Ireland throw a party.
Looking forward to all those developments and
thank
enjoy
you.
Yourself. Thanks
thank
so
you.
Much. Emma Fogarty live in studio this Thursday morning at 22:11.